Welcome to the Valley College Connection, where John Kawai and Scott Wigand, two Valley professors, engage in a conversation about success with educators and students. Each week, they'll sit down with a different guest to find out ways each of us have had to plan, persevere, and overcome to where we are now. The show will also highlight resources and services that are working to make a difference at Valley College.
Hi, we're here with Wendy DeFore, professor of nursing at LA Valley College. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, why don't you tell us about just sort of your life growing up, and we'll just sort of walk your journey to Valley College and any advice you have for nursing students. What was your life like growing up? Where were you born?
I was born in the suburbs of Chicago, north suburbs of Chicago. I'm the youngest of three children. I'm the only girl. My family's Jewish with a Russian-Polish background. And my father went to school on the GI Bill, so he was the first one in the family to go to college. And I think I always knew I was going to go to college. I never thought anything else about that, other than education was always important in the family. And I think I had just an average childhood growing up. You know, I did some sports. I did ice skating. You know, we did bowling, we played games, you know, we had seasons. I think it was a pretty idealistic life in terms of, you know, you could actually play outside and parents didn't really worry about you. And, you know, we could play at night and we rode our bikes everywhere and just didn't think, you know, too much of anything. And I went to public elementary school. It was called Washington, which was right by my house. And then I went to a junior high school. And then 4 years of high school, which was Maine North High School. And then my third year, I decided to sign up for summer school. And I had done an extracurricular activity called Swing Choir, which was a dancing, singing group. And when I went to go sign up for my summer classes, like to take like my history, you know, U.S. history. And I think I was going to take something else, like to get it out of the way. They said, you know, you're going to have enough credits to graduate. So I talked to my parents and said, bye, I'm graduating early. I'm done. I'm going out in 3 years. My mom said, well, that's fine, but you got to work and go to school. You can't just stay home. That's not going to happen. So I had some friends in high school who were active in theater like I was too, and singing. And they had girlfriends who were a little older who came from outside of our school. And I really kind of clicked with them. And we started hanging out together. They were a couple years older than me, and they had already started college. And they were nursing students. And I kind of was intrigued about what they were doing. And I always was in the helping mode. I had volunteered with some of our mentally challenged students. I always babysat. I tried to do health classes. I remember, you know, some background in that. And I myself ended up in the hospital when I was about 15 or 16 years old with pneumonia. And so I think it just kind of set the tone toward that kind of a field somewhere. And I like science.
Well, let me roll you back there then. So when you were in elementary school and high school, were you a good student?
Yeah, I was a good student. It came really easily to me.
And then how did this theater get started in you? Did you take classes or was it just something that the community of friends you had were into?
You mean nursing or theater?
Theater.
I always loved to sing. And I always loved musicals. I remember growing up, my mother always, we would clean the house on Saturdays, and she would always put on, like, My Fair Lady and Fiddler on the Roof, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein. So I always heard that, and I always, she loved to watch musicals, and then I got into it. I always watched them. So I loved to watch all of these shows on television, The King and I always loved to sing. And so when I got, there were talent shows, I would try out for the talent shows. And, you know, I did, you know, some dance classes. I really didn't do anything in terms of acting. But when I was in high school, we had a regular choir and they had tryouts for the swing choir. And so I tried out and I made it as a freshman, which they didn't take many freshman girls. I was the only freshman girl that they took. So that was pretty, pretty cool. And I did that my whole way through college. And then when they had shows at school, I would, you know, sing and I would audition for them, but I didn't like, you know, really do a lot. I did voice. So I did, you know, did some singing and I also wanted to try and do some sports. I wanted to do volleyball and badminton. So I kind of did that. So
I mean, I tried to be, you know, kind of extroverted in school. And then, you know, I worked, you know, beside babysitting. Then I got a job when I was like 15, 16 years old and started to work. So I, for some reason, it was an inner drive. I don't remember like my parents pushing me to do all these things, but there definitely somehow was an inner drive in me.
You know, I think it's nice too. I think you grew up in a generation where you could do a lot of things. I feel like the current generation now, we a lot of times they're just set up to like, well, you've got to do this much math, so that just takes up all of your time. And when I look at my kids, you know, every summer is spent with academics or getting ahead in terms of summer school. And when I talk to either older adults or adults that come from rural areas, they have this really multifaceted, you know, life growing up in high school and elementary school that I think oftentimes we lack in LA. So you know how to swing dance? You know how to, what kind of dancing do you do?
Well, I used to do swing dancing. I love to dance. So, I mean, that was how, you know, when I was, you know, out of college, that's what I did. I used to go dancing. I wasn't one to go drinking. I just like to go anywhere that we could go dancing, and I just love to dance. I mean, I remember the disco craze, and we took disco dance lessons, and the swing choir, we did tap, you know, we did whatever moves they asked us to do. You know, in that time in high school, they actually taught you dance. You know, they taught us how to do the jitterbug. They taught us how to do the polka. They taught you how to do a waltz. That was part of what we did.
Yeah, I think I was the last generation who had that.
And that's really a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. And then they remove PE, right? And then they remove dance and they remove music. And I think what they're finding out is that the students learn worse when they don't learn that physical activity, because that tactile coordination actually connects with your ability to learn.
It is, absolutely. And I think that we don't give students credit enough now. I think parents baby them way too much. There are too many helicopter parents out there that either guide them or tell them what they need to do, as opposed to letting them figure it out. If they fall flat on their face, they just need to know that you're there to pick them up and to be with them. But you need to let your kids fail.
Yeah, I agree with you. I remember talking to my son's first grade teacher, and she told me that I can tell which kid will do well in their multiplication table by how well they run, because she said they're connected.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. What was your job when you were 15?
So I got a job. Let's see. My first job was working as a cashier at a clothing store. It was called Evans Furriers, but they had clothing as well. So that was my first job.
And then you were also working with mentally challenged patients in high school?
Yeah, I mean, I remember taking some classes. I don't even remember how I found them. I don't know whether it was through the counselors or what, but I remember going to the hospital. It was actually the hospital I was born at, but they had some outpatient classes, and I remember taking some kind of health classes, and I remember we were working with mentally challenged students. I don't remember anymore what it was. I wish I could. I was trying to, what was it? I don't remember. But yeah, I did do that. And then after I left Evans Furriers, I got a job as a waitress. So that really challenged me, because you were like running around busy and you had to get really organized, and it was a lot of fun. And then I got into college and I applied as a bank teller. And so my entire college years, I worked as a bank teller all the way through to help pay my way through college. My parents helped me. I worked every weekend. This bank, they had a branch bank. It was open on Sundays. So I worked Friday nights and I worked Sunday days, and I worked all the way through college doing that. And then on my summers, I worked until the last year of college, of nursing school, when I got a job as a student nurse worker. They called them nurse externs, and that was in San Diego. My parents had moved there in my senior year of college. And so that's also what kind of prompted me to come to California, because they were living out here. So I left the Chicagoland area after I graduated college. I had a bachelor's degree in nursing, and I was 20 years old.
Well, which college did you go to?
Loyola University of Chicago.
Oh, wonderful. And then how was that as a college to attend?
it was very different. Where I had done so well in high school, I didn't, I think I really lacked the very organized study skills that you really needed in college. And literally the first semester, I fell flat on my face. I thought I was taking good notes, but actually I probably was looking at the cute history professor, listening to him and oogling him and ogling him more than I was taking the notes. And then when it came to writing, which I thought I did pretty well on, I didn't do well. And so there was a lot of tears and drama. I went on academic probation because I got a D in that class. And I had to pick myself up, and I found friends and a study group. And I had an aunt, my mother's sister, who lived out here in California, who literally would help me edit my papers. I mean, I'd be screaming and crying, and why are you ripping this apart? Until I really learned how to write because of her. She really helped me a lot.
And then at the time, was it difficult to enter the nursing major? Do they have the whole setup of a pre-major and all that kind of stuff that we do now?
Well, at Loyola, you are admitted into the School of Nursing immediately as a freshman. And then you take your prerequisite classes as a part of that. And usually those classes, like your all your science classes, like your anatomy, your physiology, your micro, those are biology. Those are taken with other pre-nursing students, although the teachers are the same teachers that teach like pre-med and pre-dental students.
Mm-hmm. And this was, Loyola, was that a Jesuit or was that a Catholic school?
It's a Catholic school that is Jesuit, and the Jesuits were cool. They were great. They were really pretty modern in their thought. I mean, I had non-Jesuit and Jesuit teachers. Because it was Jesuit religious, I had to take three religious classes and three philosophy classes. And I actually really loved my New Testament class. Although I'm Jewish, I did really well in that class because it was really about understanding who the people were that wrote the New Testament and their writing styles and what they were trying to do. And that was what the class was about. And I got an A in that class. I love that class. I still remember to this day. It's a commuter school for the most part. So I lived at home and took public transportation. My parents felt I was too young to live on campus the first year. I mean, they did have, you know, people who could live there. And then in my sophomore year, I had joined a sorority in my freshman year, and I lived in the sorority. We had a condo. So I lived in the condo. And then my third year, I lived partially at home, and I lived partially in an apartment on off campus. And then my last year, when my parents moved to California, I went into the dorm, you know, 100%. And that's where I lived my last year.
And was that sorority a Greek sorority, or was it, I mean, it's hard to imagine a Greek sorority at a Jesuit college. Was that a Greek sorority or?
Absolutely Greek, Theta Phi Alpha. I was actually ended up being president of the chapter for 2 years.
And then how did you enjoy that lifestyle?
Well, we were not a wild partying school. We just weren't. And I was always underage in terms of drinking. And I wasn't a drinker. Like, I hate the taste of beer. So it would have to have been mixed drinks. And I was underage. And I was just so busy with nursing school, I really didn't get into the drinking. I would socialize with all my sorority sisters, and we would meet up. And sometimes if they had nursing students, we would study or biology or whatever. But I wasn't into the partying scene like some of people might have been. Mm-hmm. But it really taught me a lot. You know, I felt a camaraderie with those people. I think it helped to attach me more to the school and to long-term kind of goals and views of things.
So what did you learn from being at the sorority?
I think I learned teamwork because we worked together. I learned that I think I'm more together, you know, not just as an individual, but as a whole. And so you always have your sisters around you, and you work together and collaboratively, which ironically, that's very much what nursing is.
So how did you enjoy your nursing classes? How was the camaraderie among your cohort?
It was really great. It actually clicked. It made a lot of sense to me. It was a lot of hard work, but I loved it. I loved going to clinical. I loved being with the patients. I always asked for more. I always asked questions. I always thought outside of the box. We used to have to go to the hospital the day before or go to the teacher's office door, and there would be a list
and your name and the name of the patient and what their diagnosis was and some information about them. And we would have to come to the hospital the next day with a list of all potential problems in nurse speak, so to speak. We call that nursing diagnosis or nursing problems that we felt the patient might have. And people would turn in lists that had like two or three, and I would have lists that had like 15. Because I thought, well, what if? Well, what if? Well, what if? And I guess, you know, I didn't think about it then, but I guess already I was thinking above and beyond. And I remember, like, you know, working really hard and getting these really tough patients. And at the end, she assigned me three patients and everybody else got two patients. And I thought, oh my God, she's picking on me. What's going on? Until someone pointed out to me, Wendy, did you ever think that the reason you got more patients is because you could handle it and they couldn't? And it really kind of set me at a very different thinking. Like, that's right. I could do it. It made sense to me. So nursing really made so much sense to me. I love being with patients. I've always loved being with patients. I love talking to them. I love their stories, who they are. They're like a book, you know, and you're trying, and I always love to read. And so you're trying to, you know, digest the story, who the characters are, what the plot is, you know, where the twists and turns are going to go. And so it really kind of set into who my mind, what my mind was and who I am. So it made a lot of sense to me. I love the stories. You know, even growing up, my parents always took us to visit family and, you know, they always told us stories and I'd love to hear about the stories. So I think that was good. My parents made sure that I was really socially adept, not inept. And so that really helped as well.
I do think that whole personality component is a huge part of nursing, that it's not just technical and it's not just science. It really is you're first line. You're on the first line and basically you're the person who spends all the time with the patient, not really the doctor.
I think also the mindset, John, is at least when I was growing up and maybe is that I was looking not for a job. I was looking for a career. And that's, I think the mind is different. We also stayed in jobs longer. People, you know, jump from job to job to job a lot. And that's not how I was raised. You stayed in a job for a long period of time before you moved on.
Yeah. So once you graduated then, was it easy to find a job?
Actually, no, because it was 1983 and they had just implemented a new type of federal reimbursement. It was called DRGs. And the hospitals were very gun-shy, especially here in California, because they weren't sure what their reimbursements were going to be. They were very gun-shy to hire. And so I had applied to a few places and I didn't see any openings. And so my father reached out to a cousin of his who was married to a doctor who partially owned a small hospital in the San Fernando Valley, called Medical Center of North Hollywood, which is not there anymore. And I got hired. And at first there were days like they didn't have enough staffing and they would call me off. And then as, you know, things, reimbursements got better and they figured out what was going on, I was working more and more. But I wanted to do more in terms of learning from where I was. And I was always intrigued with like critical care and ER and those kinds of things from TV shows and from the fact that my father had open heart surgery when I was a teenager. And so I was kind of intrigued in those kinds of areas. And I applied, I saw an ad for Kaiser. So I applied to Kaiser Sunset for a job. And she brought me in and she talked to me and she asked me, what are my strengths and what are my weaknesses? I told her my strengths, you know, communication, organization, you know, inquiry, whatever it may be. And then she asked me, what were my weaknesses? And I said, I don't have any. I said, there are areas that I do not have experience in, but I don't consider them weaknesses. They're just areas of challenge that I need to learn about. And she told me she liked my answer. And that was from school. They taught us this in our nursing professionalism class. And she offered me a job. I wanted to go into their new hiring for critical care class. And she says, you don't have enough experience. Would you consider working for us as a new grad? And I thought, well, it's full time. And it's benefits and it's a union job. And I said, okay. So I took the job and I worked there,
for 12 years.
And how'd you enjoy it?
I loved it. I was really very blessed in my opportunities for learning. I will say that, John, between, you know, my undergrad education and then Kaiser Sunset is a teaching hospital. I had a wonderful mentorship program as a new grad. I mean, they took the time to mentor you and find out the best unit that you would be suited to. And then when I took the critical care class, again, it was a wonderful 12-week-long mentorship program where you had classroom and then you had quote-unquote clinical. You went to the bedside and you learned different areas. And then when you were done, you put in a bid as to where you wanted to work, and the nursing staff and the managers on the unit, along with the educators, sat down and figured out what would be best. And I got what I asked for. I wanted to work in cardiac surgery. So I went from evening shift on a medical, mm-hmm. on a surgical floor to night shift in a surgical ICU for hearts.
And, so at that time, you're doing 3 12-hour shifts?
No, we started eights. Everything was 8 hours in the 80s.
Okay. Which is probably more sane, right?
You had more continuous. First of all, patients were in the hospital longer, so you got to know them. And when you do multiple days in a row, you really got a chance to get to know your patients.
So now, you were, go ahead.
Now with 12-hour shifts, with patients not staying as long, and the way the shifts run, you know, sometimes it'd be very easy to have all new patients on one day versus the other. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. And then I think when some of the 12-hour shifts, they switch, right? Where sometimes you go nights. Then I think my friends, when they had started in the 90s, they were doing 12s. And one week they're doing 12s in the day. The next week they're doing 12s at night. And you're having to transition your body from being a night person to a day person.
And did they work at UCLA?
Yeah. It was just brutal on them.
Yeah, UCLA, they did 3 weeks of nights, 1 week of days. And I did not. I worked consistently one shift. And that was fine. I used to bunch my days together, 2 to 3 days. You know, if it was 12 hours or eights, you did 3 or 4 in a row so that you weren't bouncing back and forth. Because you're right, it creates a lot of havoc on your body.
So would you recommend working at a hospital as the best first step out of nursing school, or is there a better step?
No, absolutely. I think you really need to see the sick patients and be able to think on your feet. I think that they shouldn't go into ICU or the emergency room at first. I think they should work on a medical or a surgical, or if they want to work in peds, go to a general peds unit. If you want to work with women's health, you know, go to a postpartum or a women's health unit before you go, let's say, into labor and delivery or specialty areas. Because you cannot count on bells and whistles to tell you. You can't count on electronics. You need to count on actually the physical assessment of the patient, which is laying your hands on the patient by listening to their lungs and their heart, by touching their skin, you know, feeling what their pulse is like, seeing if their skin is dry or they have edema. Or whatever, you need to put your hands. That is what the art of nursing is.
Yeah. So how many patients did you see when you first started?
So when I worked at Medical Center North Hollywood, we had 5 on evening shift. And then when I went to Kaiser, they did team nursing. So I would work on a team. I had a group of patients as the RN with an LVN, and we would have 12 patients that we would split, and we had the best time. We raced around like crazy, and I tell you, it was a great experience. I know it sounds weird, but it was. You'd have 12 people, 12 patients. They all had IVs and antibiotics, and the LVN had her part. She was like doing vital signs. She was giving the pills, and I was getting all the IVs ready and taking off all the orders, and we worked together. It was great.
Yeah, I think that's the part that a lot of nurses don't understand, that they're actually a manager.
Yeah.
Right. They have to manage people. And I think the other part that they have to understand, that they have to get dirty. Right.
Yep.
That a lot of times you have these nurses where they go, I just push meds and I don't change diapers. I don't clean beds. Right. And All right. Yeah, you do all of that.
Yeah. You shouldn't be in nursing. I know that there was a school that came once to one of the nursing units at Kaiser
when I was working as a clinical instructor. And the nursing instructor said, "Well, my students don't clean patients. That's the CNA's work." And the facility kicked that school out of their hospital. Mm-hmm. Kicked them right out. Like, sorry.
And they should.
Yep. That's right.
And you could tell, my wife is a nurse. My wife's a nurse. My sister-in-law is a nurse. One of my closest friends is a nurse. And I think nothing angers them more than an RN who refuses to get their hands dirty. Yep. Right? And if you're going to lead, you got to go first. And if you have a team of LVNs with you, then well, you got to get your hands dirty or they won't respect you.
Absolutely. You have to be able to clean shit with the best of them, I say.
Yep. So usually when I have students in my class, they're usually trying to get into the nursing program. That's the first thing I say, that if you're unwilling to clean an older gentleman's diaper, that's the wrong job for you. And they usually look at me with horror. Well, that's what it is.
Well, the smart professors, when we see students who are like that, that's the patients we give them. We want to we want to be in nursing. And so we'll give them a patient that is total care, and they're going to have to do all that because it either make them or break them. And it's not to kill the student. It's to say, look, this is the reality of what it is. If you're up for it, we're here for you. But this is not for you. It's not a bad thing to say it's not for you.
Yeah. So I know my wife, when she was working in Utah, she had, just like you, she saw 6 patients. And then when she came to LA and she just saw how many patients you were seeing, she just didn't feel safe. So she didn't feel safe doing 12. So she became a coordinator for drug studies, because it was scary, right? You have someone's life in your hands. So
law though that was passed by and the California Nurses Association and our union helped with that. To make minimum staffing requirements. And so now, if you're going to team lead, there's a max amount. And in terms of how many patients you can care for, that's also been stipulated by the state. So they can't go over those staffing ratios anymore.
Oh, good. I think now that she's been working on drug studies and wears a suit every day, I don't think she can go back because it's a real physical job. I mean, you're lifting people and, you know, you're like you said, you're running around all day. So yeah, let me ask. Go ahead.
No, say it's emotionally and physically very challenging.
So how are you able to go home every day after, you know, seeing a family, you know, seeing a sick child or a sick family member? Like, how are you able to disconnect sort of your service at work and then go home and just be your normal self? Because you're a very positive person every time I see you.
I think that I always try and do the best that I possibly can. I try to give my best always. That's how I was taught as a nurse and as a person to give my best. So I don't do mediocre. I always try and rise to the occasion to give the best that I can do. And I try because not everything is successful. Not all people, patients, get better. Sometimes we have to ease them actually into death. We have to help them cope with getting worse and illnesses. It's not always, you know, a happy time. And that's the reality of nursing. And I can go home and say, okay, I did my best job and now I have to do my job at home. You know, once in a while it carries over. I will say even now, John, I still have dreams about when I worked on the units and stuff. I can remember different things and I do have nightmares too, like, oh my God, I forgot to give medicine to somebody because I'm always worried about my students making sure they give their medications to the patient. But sure. I have never forgotten a medication on a patient ever. Mm-hmm.
So are you comfortable? I mean, I think I had another friend who said she was always scared about becoming a professor because your students' mistakes are your mistake on your license, right?
True, but it's not, I mean, yes, they're covered, you know, by my license and by the malpractice insurance that the school carries. But the bottom line is that students are told you can only do certain things. And I talked to them actually yesterday. We had an open house. And I said, no one is ever going to let you hurt a patient. We have very specific checks and balances.
when we say something like, no, you cannot do this without your instructor or the nurse present, you don't break those rules. And if you break them, you're out of the program for a reason. But if you follow the rules and you listen to what we say and you digest that, okay, and make it part of who you are, you will turn into a safe practitioner.
Yeah. So how did you end up at Valley College?
I knew when I was an undergrad, I was really in awe of, especially one of my teachers. Her name was Professor Jacobs, and I loved Esther Jacobs, and she was really much a mentor for me. She was also Jewish, and there weren't that many Jewish nurses at the time, and she would work on her summers, and I just thought she was really cool, and I had some other teachers that I really liked, and I thought, I want to be a teacher someday. And so my personal goal was to enter grad school to get my master's within 10 years of finishing my bachelor's. That was my goal. And I graduated in 1983, and I was back in grad school in 1991 or 92. I can't remember now. I was back in school.
Okay. And then, so what was the process of getting to Valley College? Like, once you were here, how did you enjoy being a professor?
Well, I was kind of thrown to the wolves. Like, basically, you have a lecture next week. Here's the reading material. See you then. Huh? What? It was kind of like, whoa. But you know what? I knew I had a good education. And mm-hmm. I knew, you know, they taught you how to do some practice teaching in grad school. And as a nurse, you're always teaching patients. You're possibly teaching new nurses, new orientees. I was, you know, going over stuff with the staff all the time. So it wasn't like I wasn't aware. I kind of looked at my surroundings and looked at who these people were and thought about, how did I learn? How do other people learn? And I kind of took that kind of under, you know, into advisement as I started to bridge out and teach. It took me probably 3 or 4 years to really own the classroom, I think. Clinical was much easier. I think I got into that pretty fast because I was working at Cedars at the time, and that's where my clinical site was. And so it was very easy for me to transition over there. I knew all the staff. They all knew me because I worked there. And so it was very easy to do that.
Yeah, I love nursing faculty because of all the sort of professions, there is no BS with any nursing faculty anywhere, right? You never see a nursing faculty like, it doesn't matter. Everything matters. You know, so I like just how like professional the nursing faculty are, not at our school, but every school that I've seen. They are don't mess around. This is important. What we do is important kind of profession. And I just sort of love that about nursing in general. So let me ask you this. What advice would you give someone who would like to get into the nursing program? What are the things besides getting very good grades that help you get in?
Well, it doesn't help you get in, but what I would say in terms of your perseverance, in terms of your determination, making sure this is the right choice for you, I would encourage them to look at possibly becoming a CNA. Taking a CNA class, you know, something to do with, you know, medical, there are certainly volunteer opportunities at a lot of the major medical centers to work there, to at least start to meet people. I think that they have to increase their verbal skills and their, you know, meeting people from all walks of life, old, young, from all different kinds of cultures, and understand that people are different from themselves. I think they have to think about being independent from their parents, and they have to learn how to state what their needs are.
And then what kind of personality traits really don't match with nursing?
Perfection.
Okay.
Nonchalant attitude, like, I could take it or leave it. No, you have to be committed.
Mm-hmm.
Irresponsibility doesn't work.
Sure.
Dishonesty doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one, yeah.
Does that help? I think that's...
Yeah, oh, that's good. Important. I mean, I think, you know... It's like one of those things where you have someone's life in your hand, right? You can't be a person that panics. You have to be a team player.
Yep.
And you can't be lazy.
That's true. And I said, and you have to admit that you don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers, but you can meet people and get them.
Right, right. I think there's an, another thing too, where I think, you know, a lot of times doctors are mean, but you are the patient's advocate. You're the person who calls the doctor, and you have to not care if the doctor's mean. You need the information. You need the information. Too bad. You can be mean, but this is important, right? So I agree with that. Now, in terms of after you become a nurse, what are the sort of other degrees that you would recommend, like nurse practitioner or a master's in nursing?
Okay, so we give an associate degree at Valley College. We also have a collaborative where students can enroll in University of Phoenix or Cal State Northridge, and they can complete their bachelor's degree while they're doing their associate, and they will finish up about 9 months after they graduate from Valley. The classes are offered during the intersession. Mm-hmm. But come 2023, we're going to have a concurrent enrollment with a concurrent curriculum of ADN and BSN, so that, yes, they'll get their ADN in nursing and they can take their boards and work, but they will get their bachelor's degree at the same time and finish up within 6 months less. Mm-hmm. And they will be considered full-time, because right now that collaborative is during the intersession doesn't count toward full-time status. Mm-hmm. Whereas the concurrent enrollment, they'll be taking 9 units of nursing and 3 units of their bachelor. So they'll have 12 units and they'll be considered full-time on paper, which is important for financial aid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always consider the nursing pathway the shortest distance into the middle class, right? I don't think there's any other pathway that is short, that is quicker into the middle class. What
maybe,
do you think?
Maybe respiratory therapy. I mean, you think respiratory therapy also is another one?
I think so, but I think the upside potential of RN is probably higher, right? Where I think with respiratory therapy, you hit a ceiling a lot quicker.
That's true. Yeah, they usually, I mean, a bachelor's, they don't get, there's no master's program, I don't believe, in respiratory therapy. If they want to get a master's in education because they want to teach or they want to do research and get a doctorate, that's different, but you're right. Whereas in nursing, you can get a master's in nursing education, nursing administration, nursing leadership, or you can become a nurse practitioner, although nurse practitioner programs are changing. Many of them are becoming doctorate programs now.
So
also,
how
nurse anesthetist.
Okay, so how is the nursing master's programs different from the nurse practitioner programs?
Well, they're both master's programs, but one is a clinical focus, you know, and one is going to be either a research focus or an education focus or an administrative focus and leadership. You know, if you're thinking administration, you got to know about budgets. You know, you have to know other strategies in terms of business sense. If you're talking about a master's degree going toward education, you're going to have to understand educational theory. You're going to have to really, everything's going to be about research, but the focus is going to be different. You know, is it education for students? Is it education for patients? Is it education for staff nurses? Because they're very different types of learners.
I see. So would a nurse practitioner then is much closer to a physician's assistant then, you would say?
I think they are a bit different. They both have, they're both able to prescribe medications. They have DEA licenses, but the nurse practitioner has more of a holistic approach and a nursing focus, whereas a physician assistant is going to come from the medical model, and they're going to look more at disease processes specifically.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for all this information. I didn't know half of this. Now, you told us that you just told me at the beginning of this interview that this is your first year that you're retiring?
I'm retiring. I retired as of June 30th.
Mm-hmm.
I took early retirement because they offered us a little incentive. And in addition, I have a new grandchild, and I'm young enough that I have scrimped and saved with my husband, and we felt like, let's go now while we're young enough to enjoy the grandbaby, and we still have our health.
So what are your future plans then in retirement?
Well, we just sold our house. I'm officially a renter as of yesterday. And we are in the middle of purchasing another home in North Carolina.
And I've been asked to come back to do an intercession clinical in January, and then to actually do an adjunct assignment in February, because we're in the middle of accreditation. And I told Preetha, our director, that I would do that. I was the assistant director of the nursing program for the last 3 years. And so I've kind of been like her right arm. I wrote a lot of grants. I helped with a lot of the reports. I was kind of like there to kind of be the strong man when she needed it in the mouth. And we worked very well together. So it's been very hard, I think, to leave her.
Well, but we're going to miss you. We are going to miss you. I know your students are going to miss you. I have your students because I teach mathematics to the nursing students. But I want to wish you good luck with your new grandchild.
Thank you so much.
And this has been a wonderful interview, and I think a lot of people are going to get a lot out of this. Thank you so much.
I hope so. Just let them know also that the website for the college for nursing has a lot of information on it. We offer a lot of supports for our students who get admitted to the program because we believe that they can be successful.
Awesome. Thank you. I guess they can get that by just typing in, Googling LEVC and nursing, and I think it pops up right away.
It does. You're right. It does. And it talks about our admission criteria and the classes. And there's stuff about the faculty there as well.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you. And thank you so much.
Thank you for the interview, John. It was a pleasure.